Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and today is Thursday, February the 20th, 2014. We welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Be patient in the chat room there, because my computer's rebooted, and I haven't got it turned on yet, but it'll be on within just a moment. So here is Michael.
Thank you, sweetie. Good afternoon and welcome to Mindshifters Radio. It's a delight and an honor to share with each and every one of you these ancient principles and the understanding of how the world really works. You know, we have all kinds of belief systems. We call those BS. Some people have a different meaning for those initials, but when I talk about BS, I'm talking about belief systems. And one of the reasons for belief systems, instead of loving truth and understanding how the world actually works, is that belief systems protect us from our own insanity. When I say protect us, I really shouldn't say that. That's a misnomer. They shield us from our own insanity. We get to believe that everybody else is the problem in our lives when, you know, and you've heard me say it before, my favorite tongue-in-cheek line is, notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. It's about you. It's not about anybody else. And everything that I'm going to say is senseless if we're not creators. So if you can pretend that you're not a creator, then you might as well stop listening to the show because it's a waste of your time. But if you recognize, and this is probably one of the greatest atrocities that we've had done to us down through the ages and that we've bought into. It's not that we're victims of it. It's been done, yes, in the external world, and we've bought into it. And that is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. We create the results that happen in our lives, and we create them either consciously or unconsciously. These are the principles that were being expressed 2,000 years ago when they said the words, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Now, up until just the last few decades, we couldn't translate that word heart in the Western world. We didn't have a clue what it meant. Now that the unconscious has been rediscovered, and Freud got a Nobel Prize for discovering the unconscious. But if you go back to the ancient Aramaic, you'll find that the unconscious is extremely well defined. And in fact, built into the language is syntax, and it's the only language on the planet that I know of that does this, that reflects when our perception and our behaviors are being driven by unconscious dynamics. So when they said take care of the heart, they were saying take care the unconscious. How is this unconscious created? Well, first of all, I would offer that the unconscious is a totally unnatural and artificial product. It is not normal for a human being to have, pardon me, it has become normal. It's not natural for a human being to have an unconscious mind. We create this artificial barrier in the ancient filled with the temple, when we don't want to be responsible for what we've created in our lives, when we want to be shielded from the fact that we're the ones who are attacking ourselves. You know, Pogo is one of the most enlightened masters of all time in this one regard. When you look at the Pogo comic strip, you hear Pogo saying, "We have met the enemy, and the enemy is us." But when I enter into denial, I can hide the parts of me that participate in what makes me a victim. You cannot experience victimhood without participation. It's a participatory world. You're involved in everything that happens around you. And once you recognize this, then the work becomes the search for the part of my mind that I've been hiding from myself, the part of my mind that comes back to bite me in the butt, but I can talk about it as though somebody else is the problem because it was their teeth that bit my butt. But while their teeth were biting my butt, the reason they showed up in my life is because there's a part of me hidden, unconscious, take care of the heart, the unconscious, for out of it are the issues in life. You notice they didn't say, take care of the other guy, for out of them. Take care of the enemy. No, it doesn't say that. It says take care of the heart. Take care your own unconscious dynamics, creator, because you set up the dynamics that bring these experiences to you. Now, do these experiences come to you? Yes, absolutely. And some of them are horrific and horrendous and insane and unconscionable and illegal and immoral and just downright dirty. But it's a participatory world. If you refuse to engage in the understanding of and the tools for correcting that, then you're going to get your butt bitten for the rest of eternity. It's never going to change. I don't care how much struggle and how much fight and how much justice you try to create in the world, it's going to come back and get you. Once you enter into the actual ancient work of forgiveness, then you consent to, you know, it's kind of like those permissions that you have to sign when you put an app on your phone. You give permission for the hidden, shielded parts of your mind to start to show up. Instead of in the outer world as manifestation, you give them permission to start to show up inside of you. And that can be heavy, heavy duty. It takes time to comprehend that that's possible. It takes time to even imagine that that could possibly be true. But in 50 years or so, or almost 50 years of doing this work, I look around at how many people have made such huge breakthroughs, such huge shifts, and had, you know, one example I think of, I was in Atlanta about, this goes back, probably 12, 14 years ago, maybe longer than that, 15 years ago. And there's a Unity Church there that I speak at fairly often. Actually, when the minister that I knew was there, I haven't been there in several years, but when I arrived on Sunday morning to do the service, this young woman came up to me and said, "Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life." And my response to her was, "Well, you know, I just got into town late last night. It wasn't me." And she said, "Well, let me share what happened." She said, "Last year when you were here, I attended all of your workshops and I started doing worksheets." And she said, "Oftentimes as I was doing my work, I would hear your voice in my head saying the words conscious, active, present love." And you'll notice I use that phrase a lot, have been for several decades now. It describes a human life, the power of a human life. And of course, our definition for a human life is hold a newborn child. You know exactly what conscious, active, present love is. But she said, "Oftentimes those words would just kind of ring in my ears." And she said, "It was kind of cool." But about 6 months ago, I came home from work. I went into my apartment. I locked the door and found myself locked in my apartment with a man who had a knife. He held the knife to my throat and told me that he was going to rape me and kill me. And holding the knife to my throat, he proceeded to take my clothes off and rape me. And she said, "I was terrified and I knew that I was dead, that I was about to die." And she said, "All of a sudden in my head, your voice rang, conscious, active, present love. And she said it was like something flipped a switch in me. Actually, what happened was she had engaged in the practice of the work sufficiently that she was able to respond that way. And she said that it shifted in me, and all of a sudden, I was filled with that presence of love. And she said, I looked in this man's face, and what I saw was stark, raving terror. And even though I knew he was about to murder me, I moved into compassion for him. Now, this isn't part of her story, but what I would explain happened there is that probably for the first time in his life, someone looked at this young man through the eyes of conscious, active, present love. She said, I moved into compassion for him, and she said, it didn't matter that I was about to die. That was okay. She said, the minute I looked at him, he began to cry. He's raping her. I mean, he's literally, physically raping her, has a knife at her throat. She said, he began to cry. He got up off of me, dropped his knife, and ran out of my apartment. Conscious, active, present love, the power of a human life. Now, if you don't got one of those, pardon my French, if you don't got one of those, you have a problem. And the problem is your own unconscious dynamics keep coming back and biting you in your butt. And you think it's your wife, or you think it's your husband, or you think it's your child, or you think it's your oppressor, or you think it's the guy down the block, or you think it's your boss, or you think it's the government, or you think it's somebody else's government, or you think, or you think, or you think, or you think. Well, whatever it is, whoever you're blaming, if you're in blame, if you're having a conversation about how they made me, that is, there's something happening inside of me that I want you to be responsible for, then you block your awareness of that which is happening inside of you. That is your direct access. We call it dissociation. We call talking about someone else as though they're the cause of something happening inside of you denial. So as long as you're living in denial, as long as you're not willing to step up and man up and woman up and take responsibility, I'm a creator, look what I've created here. Wow. Man, what part of me has got to believe what kind of crap to create this sort of result in my life? Now you've given your mind permission to start to show you. Now, it may not show you the first time you say that. It may not show you the first time you say you're willing because you've spent so many years and so many generations. I mean, go back to your parents. You know, Jeannie and I do a little demonstration in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop or healing relationships where we play out a little scenario where, you know, we demonstrate our matching bags of garbage. Of course, Jeannie's is only quarter size when we do it. Mine is, you know, kind of large. But and the idea of keeping those bags of garbage hidden. And then using the language of the culture, when Jeannie gives me the look, I explain to her how she hurt me. Jeannie, when you gave me that look, you really hurt me. Cancel the thought. And the impact of that on the mind, on my mind, when I say those words is, mind, you have to show me a picture that makes Jeannie responsible for what's happening inside of me. That's called denial. Now I can no longer own or change what's happening inside of me because I can't access it. By that act of denial, I've just hidden it from myself.
Michael?
And then I turn to Jeannie, and you know, when I go into that anger, what does she say? And, of course,
Michael,
in the demonstration, she's, yeah, and when you go into that, you know, blame stuff, when you blame me, that really makes me mad. And so now we have Jeannie trying to put her garbage of mad into my bag and make me responsible for the fact that inside of her there's anger happening. And I'm trying to make her responsible for the fact that there's hurt happening inside of me. So now we stand as non-creators, victim to each other, and victim to our own insane, untrue language. So we move into, and this is part of the communication, did you hear what I think I said process that we do, demonstrating responsibility communication. So just imagine the scenario, we're standing up there with our bags of garbage and Jeannie has just given me the look. And instead of denial, that is, you made me hurt, I move into ownership, creatorship. Gee, Jeannie, you know what you just said brought up some really deep hurt in me. And I realize that this hurt goes back a long, long way, and I'm ready to heal it. Would you support me? And instead of somebody to blame it on, I've actually got a support team for healing. And in turn, Jeannie speaks responsibility communication. And instead of, you know, you make me mad when you do that blame stuff, it becomes, you know, when I hear what I perceive you to do is blaming me, what that brings up for me is anger. And I realize that I've got anger that I need to heal, and I'd like your support in doing it. And so once again, instead of an enemy to blame it on, she's got a support team for healing. So we do that demonstration, and then, you know, invariably, I'll ask the question, now, let me see, how many people were brought up in the household where you had a dad that when he came home, you know, and was late or drunk and she'd thrown dinner out, mom's, when dad comes to the door, says, you know, dear husband, when you come home late and I have to throw dinner out, that brings up a lot of anger for me. I'd really like to heal my anger. And everybody in the room giggles because nobody was brought up with that, Mom. And if you tell me you were, I'll be very shocked.
Are you there, Michael? Are you there, Jeannie? We've lost Michael. Hello, hello. I'm not even sure if I'm on. So I'm going to try and go online and see if I can hear him online. Michael and Jeannie Rice. It says you're live. Oh, so someone can hear me. All right. So apparently I'm on, but we've lost Michael. I was about to try to tell Michael that he was overmodulating and that there was a problem with his being too close to his speakerphone. So I was listening to Michael and hearing him talk about that, and I just watched the video that he was referring to, where he talks about, has anybody ever heard this or seen this in their life? And one time when he did that recently, there was a young man in the audience who raised his hand and said yes. And it's the only time I've heard Michael talk about this. And he said, well, tell me about that. And the fact is, he was raised by someone that had been in one of Michael's seminars many years before. So for all of the tens and tens of thousands of people that Michael has talked to, only one has ever been in the audience who's actually been raised in a family where they used responsibility communication, where the people in the family were actually made aware of the fact that they were each creating their own emotions, that the thoughts they use are literally what generate their emotions, and that emotions are simply shadows of thought. And we talk about this, and Rex was talking about it yesterday. There's a complex system involved here. If I have angry or fearful energy in me and it gets resonated, I don't have any choice about whether or not I'm going to feel it. But if I've been educated to think if I'm angry, it's coming from outside of me, I will choose to focus outside of me to try to blame other people for what I'm feeling inside. If I've been raised to believe that my emotions are coming from the thoughts that I generate and from the energies in my system, then once I begin to feel an energy that's been triggered in me and I have no choice about whether or not I feel it, I can step back, take a breath, and choose to look inward and actually take responsibility for uncovering how I'm generating this and dismantling it, applying tools to dismantle the negative energies, the thought energies, the physical energies, the traumatic energies from the past. I've started to talk about it as the energenetics. It's both the energy and the genetics that I get from my bloodline. And Michael likes to talk about how in the ancient scriptures they say that the sins of the father are passed, yea, into three and four generations. And in some of his lectures, Michael is real clear about saying it's not just the sins, it's also the delights, the joys, the skills, the resources, the wisdom. However, all of that is wrapped up with a lot of trauma and blame and pain, and the trauma and blame and pain get resonated. It's hard to see and have access to the knowledge, the wisdom, the compassion, the ability to focus on your conscious connection as the energy of love. So our job, as they talk about in Way of Mastery and in A Course in Miracles, is not to go find love outside of ourselves. It's not to make love within ourselves or search for where we have love within us. It's simply for us to search for and remove anything that's less than love from our energetic system, from our mind and our body's energy system. The process for that is fairly simple, thanks to the Creator. All we have to do is take a breath and back up and watch for any time we're triggered to any kind of a negative emotion. That's our alarm system going off telling us our thoughts are off target. That's the alarm system telling us we are in error and we are creating the illusion of separation and the pain and suffering that comes with that by pretending that we're not made of the stuff of love, by pretending that we are not in a loving universe and that all there is love and that God is love and that we're a part of that ocean that we're swimming in. That's how we create our pain and our suffering. And it's a choice, once we become aware of it, to continue that or to step back and apply tools to remove that dream or the energies that feed that dream. So that's what we're here to support people doing. And there was some kind of a change in the tone of my voice in my own ear. So I'll ask, is Michael back on or is Jeannie on? Did we get them to rejoin us yet? Okay. Well, if there's anybody else who's normally on the phone, and you may or may not know whether or not you have your hand up, if you have a question or a comment, try speaking, and I'll let you know if I hear you. The number is 646-200-4169, and my best guess is that something happened with the internet connection for Michael and Jeannie, somewhere between here and Costa Rica, and that's why we're not hearing Michael. I will say, since there's some time to talk here, that I've gotten some very nice comments about the blog entry that I read yesterday from a woman who attends our support group, and I got her permission to send it to Michael and Jeannie and let them put that up on their website, and I did that. I remember that I've gotten a request from Rex to send it to him. I haven't done that yet, but I will. And what I use that for, it may have gotten lost because it's such a beautiful piece of writing, but the reason I read that was because it was such a powerful example of what Michael was talking about in the lecture, Healing Through Relationships, that we are all connected. And that we all have experiences of thinking of someone we went to high school or college with and we haven't thought of them in weeks or months or years. And then within hours or days of thinking about them for the first time in ages, they call or we find out that something big has happened in their life. We are all connected. Michael has a number of stories of people who did very intense breath work or worksheet sessions down at the intensive center in Missouri called Heartland, and within hours or days of doing that work, focused on a family member or a child or an ex-lover or whatever, they hear from that person. Where there hasn't been connection or there's been anger and bitterness and resentment for years, and within hours or days of doing their own inner work, they hear from that person, and the whole relationship is open to a new level. Well, this blog entry that I read yesterday called The Illusion, which talks about the illusion of having something missing from me or feeling like there's an emptiness or a hole in me that I have to fill, that came about at the same time I was reading Lesson 31 from A Way of Mastery. And if you look at Lesson 31 from Way of Mastery and you have that blog entry in front of you, I believe you would be hard-pressed not to think that the same person wrote both of them. And that came out of an interaction from a person in our support group who was doing some of her own internal work and worksheets on feeling like there was a hole in her and feeling there was pain. And when she tapped into the concept that we're whole and complete, we are the essence of that newborn, that creative essence as love was in us when we were born and remains in us, remains untouched, unsullied. It's not damaged, chipped, broken, rusted, faded in any way. And when she tapped into that, that's how that blog entry came about, just flowing out of her. And granted, most of us are not consciously aware of our true nature as that pure essence of love, mostly because we've bought into the distractions and the conditioning of the outside world. I really like Dale Allen Hoffman recently came up with the concept of how he had been calling things counterintuitive, and now he calls them counterconditioning. It's a wonderful phrase. I've been talking to people for years about the need to identify and then start dismantling their conditioning. The conditioning of the family, the conditioning of the culture, the conditioning of the workplace, so many of which are based in hostility and fear. And the getting another message from somebody. Apparently, Michelle is going to try and...
We'd be here. We'd be back.
Yay!
Hey, at what point did you lose us? I didn't know. I'm just sitting away.
Well, we didn't lose you at all. We just picked right up and moved on through.
But I'm just wondering where you lost my voice so that I can know where.
So you were talking about in the point of healing through relationships where people are trying to blame everybody else, and you were asking, has anybody in your audiences ever been raised in a family where they did responsibility communication rather than projection communication? And so then I picked up and said that you've actually talked about a time when you did that, and a young man raised his hand, and he had been raised by someone who'd been to one of your seminars many years before. That exception, all the different times you've done this, nobody's ever been raised with the responsibility communication pattern.
Well, I just went on talking after that, so thank you for picking it up and finishing the story. And your support is certainly appreciated. Sometimes the technology is a little funny, especially when we're in a third world country, although it's working fairly well from here, but my phone doesn't signal me when it goes out like that. So
did you lose the internet signal?
I don't know what happened. The phone just, I guess my voice just crashed out. The program that I'm using just quit. And
Prior to that, I was trying to cut in to let you know you're over-modulating. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
it was really good stuff, and yet you would get excited, and it would just get all distorted. So if you backed off just a bit, that'd
okay,
be
well, I'll move back from the phone a little. Is that better?
Yeah, because this is such a clear signal. You don't really need to be in the phone like you have in the past.
Right. Good. Thanks for letting me know that. All right. Well, do you have anything else to share? Jeannie's got a couple of callers.
I would go with the callers. I think we went through that pretty well.
Awesome. Thank you. Your support is just awesome.
Area code 561, you're on the air.
561, give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Hi,
is this Julie
from
Asheville?
Rashida Faye Douglas.
Oh, hi there, young lady.
How are
I
you
called
guys
you the
doing?
Other day, but I didn't catch you.
Oh, okay.
We are well.
Yes, great. Okay, great. Yeah, I just want to say hello, and I think we were having problems, and Tim was calling, and so I was going to talk back and tell him that I'm here with him. So, yeah. Thank you so much. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Much appreciation. Lots of love and blessings.
Thank you. I love you guys. Bye.
Okay. You too.
Area code 607. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Must have been me, Richard.
607. Where are you calling from?
Trying to get on and talk to Tim because he didn't know anybody was online or whether he was even talking. So I was trying to get on to let him know I could hear him, but nobody was
okay.
There to let me get on. So anyway, have a good day.
Cool.
Talk to you later.
Thank you, Richard. Blessings. All right. Well, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. We're delighted that you're with us. And, Jane, do you have any other call-ins or anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
No, we don't have any other callers, but some of the things, and I'm not sure if this was part of what came across when you were talking or if it's something that you said afterwards, but you were talking about how we resonate and draw things to us. And just this morning, someone had asked a question, so maybe I'll give you the answer that I gave them, and then maybe you'll have some other commentary on it. Their question was, where does a sociopath fit into this? And this is, I'm quoting their message. I looked at the four agreements, your work, everything. One of the things I had to realize, even looking through your work, was that people don't, in general, do things with the intention to hurt people. Like your work teaches, we do things because something within that we haven't cleared, like your work or biology of belief. We don't have people in their lives with a book that generally says, oh, I've studied you and I have a list of 1,000 ways that I can manipulate you and use you. Even though I've met several people who play games, there is an inner sense of moral consciousness regardless of the games that they play. I've realized, though, that I now know someone who has that book and uses it for their amusement. So where does this fall into the teachings? And so then my response to them was, I'd been going through and cleaning up the site and had found that question and that it hadn't been answered. So I believe what I said is the so-called sociopath is described as one who behaves with apparently no remorse about their actions and they hurt others. And they fit in just like the rest of us who operate out of carbon-based memory instead of out of who we really are. It does not matter if they, quote unquote, or Hitler or Saddam or anyone else who has acted out of fear or hostility. When this happens, they are doing behavior unlike who they really are. Everyone, I put that in capitals, came into this world in the image of the Creator. We're told that God is love. So love is what we are. It's just that somewhere along the way, one forgets who they are and they believe the lie that alone is not enough. And they begin to do behaviors to cover their pain and to attempt to find acceptance, which they mistakenly think is love. Sometimes one can get in so deep in their false persona that they lose themselves, and without intervention from the outside, they are stuck. They need to be held accountable, yes, but out of the space of love, not out of fear or anger. An example, perhaps they need to be hospitalized or even imprisoned for the safety of the community. But then they need to be taught that life can be different and that they can change their inner turmoil and release the craziness that drives them. We have a prison ministry where there are men who will never be released back into society because of their past behavior. But while they're in prison, they are given tools to change the dynamic that got them there. Many do the work in order to clear the space so their families don't follow them in the same footsteps. What good would it do to make them miserable just for the sake of vengeance? That would only add energy to the original event. And if we find ourselves in a situation where we're on the receiving end of that type of behavior, then it's because we have a resonating frequency that is drawing it into us for us to clear something in us. For example, if I hold fear, then it is my disease, and life doesn't want me to destroy myself, so it will send me someone with anger to bring up my fear so that I can heal. If I hold no resonance, they will still be angry, but they need to take it somewhere else because they need someone to be fearful of them in order to show them their anger because that's their disease. We're all here to heal, and we're here to support each other in healing. So the question is, what are you feeling that is your signal that something is off target and needs to be released? That is your work, not theirs. And getting rid of them will only guarantee another person will come and take their place until you release what's drawing them to you.
Awesome answer, sweetie. You got it. The only thing I would add to that is an example. And the gentleman that I co-authored Laws of Living with back 25, 28 years ago, his name was Dan McDougall. They used to call him Mr. Mac. He was an attorney, and he started to look at, he had a great deal of patriotism and started to look at what was deteriorating the American society. Why were things going so crazy in a culture that had originally been quite abundant and quite sane, or at least relatively sane for non-humans? And he was told, actually, by British intelligence, well, if you think you've got a solution, take it into the prison system, and you'll know whether it works or not. So he did that. And he was in, I believe it was Reidsville Prison, and there was a man there who I think would probably, from what I've had described by Dan of him, would probably be the ultimate sociopath. This man liked to kill people. That's just what he liked to do. He had murdered several people before he went into prison and was in prison for life for that. And several times in his tenure of the prison, he murdered people. He just was just the thing he liked to do. And when Dan went into the prison, there were certain factions in the prison that didn't like the fact that he was teaching people how to be free of the control of others, how to start to move the control center inside themselves instead of being controlled by others. And of course, in the prison systems, there's a hierarchy, and you know, just like the games in the world, wherever they're non-human, somebody wants to control somebody else in order to feel power, in order to get stuff, whatever it is. And Dan was teaching people how to get free of that, and there was a certain faction in Reidsville that did not like him doing that, and there was a contract put out on him. This gentleman who liked to kill people, and I don't remember, as I recall it, he killed at least 8 or 9 people. But he had gone to Dan's classes and saw what Dan was doing and the care and concern he had, even for the worst of the worst criminals. He became the one who protected Dan. He became the one who saved Dan's life and kept him from being killed. And he became the one who confronted those who knew how, quote-unquote, bad he was and threatened them to the point where they withdrew that contract. So, you know, there is that aspect of each of us that is this awesome active presence of love. And when there is safety sufficient to open the spaces where the deep trauma and pain are dissociated, and that's what leads to my take would be, and we'll ask Dr. Tim for his input, but my take would be the sociopath is the person who has the pain so pervasive and so deeply locked away that they can't touch the mainspring of compassion underneath them. Their human attributes are so buried. The human attributes have not been touched by these experiences, but they've been buried. The awareness of them has been lost. There are several aspects or several attributes of human life. One of them is sweetness. One of them is this awesome presence of love. One of them is compassion and caring. That's just what humans do. But when there's so much pain internalized, and that pain is probably a generational pain, and then having been generationally installed, genetically installed in that person, in that carbon-based memory system, the environment playing out that pain to such a level then reinforces the dissociation. And at this point, it's not just dissociation from the pain that's inside, but it's disassociation from their actual human life. The person who has total, we've got two different words happening here. Dissociation is I hide something from myself and I don't look at it. Disassociation for me would be when we cut ourselves off from total connectedness and total awareness of our human lives. We're disassociated as human beings. The person who is disassociated as a human being is running simply as an automaton, whatever's in the structure. If the power person four generations back struck out with an iron fist at the three-year-old who dared to open their mouth, then here this person five generations later, three generations later, if somebody dares to open their mouth, they strike out with an iron fist. There is no connectedness. There is such a deep disassociation from human life that whatever's structured, and the person who's in that posture will do and consider it right and good and fair to do whatever behavior their power persons have done through the generations. That's why in the Beatitudes, one of the Beatitudes says that, you know, if you look back and if you weren't part of the conversation, you might want to go back and listen to some of the archives over the last couple of weeks where we've talked about the Beatitudes. But the opening words in each of the Beatitudes, blessed are they, as the Greeks interpreted, is the word tubehun in Aramaic. And tubehun more correctly translates a latent or a hidden, an unconscious neural structure implanted in us by the Creator to guide us to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you who. And so each of the Beatitudes starts out with that. And so Yeshua talks about being in possession and control of the source of our thinking. Until we connect to the source of our thinking and go beyond that to the truth of who we are, then the disconnected, disassociated behavior tends to become the rule of that person's life. And like a computer program runs, you know, if you program 2 + 2 into a computer and you program the answer 5, every time you ask that computer what's 2 + 2, it's going to come up with 5. The person who has no capability because of disassociation from their humanness to bring compassion and truth and caring into their physiology is run by the iron fist that strikes out because that's what's in the computer. 2 + 2 = 5, that's the answer that comes. There's no new input possible till you bring that human life out. And my take would be in the story that I just shared with you about Dan McDougall, this man who enjoyed killing, that Dan was able to, with the work, touch his human life and take him out of that disassociated state, at least to some degree, where he could begin to function, and in this case in particular, function with caring and protection toward Dan instead of the violence that had governed his life to that point. I'll never forget walking into the classroom thinking of Dan, and the classroom was in, where we did this in the prison, was in Georgia. And the town was a pretty rough town. And I'll never forget one day sitting in there with Dan, and we're waiting for people to come in. These are people who, they're in a pretrial release program. It's Albany, Georgia, really tough town. And so they're coming in for their ongoing. They started doing the course in jail, and then they're coming into the classroom to complete the course. They've been released on agreement with completion of the course. And I'll never forget this guy. He's about 6'5", probably 280 pounds. I mean, and you look at him, and this is one of the meanest looking characters I've ever seen. You do not want to meet this guy in a lighted alley, let alone a dark alley. And this guy bounced into the room like the sweetest 3-year-old you could imagine. Mr. Mack, I kept RockMa active all week this week. This guy had spent most of his life in and out of jail. Drugs, alcohol, and theft to support his habit. And here he is, as excited as a three-year-old. He's reconnecting with that three-year-old, so excited that he's able to keep love active in his mind. That's what's possible. That's what we're here to do. And I certainly acknowledge Michelle and Rex and everybody who's been part of that team, Dan and Tony, everybody that's been part of that team going into the prison, Carol, Mitzi, all of you for going in and working in this heavy-duty environment where people get stabbed and killed on a regular basis because of the violence that's there. It's pretty awesome, the gift you're giving, and of course, the fact that every Wednesday we usually get to hear a report. Yesterday was pretty cool conversation with Rex. And so we appreciate all of you who do that. And, you know, do yourself in the world a favor. Change the pool of energy that's running the world. Right now, the pool of energy that's running the world is by and large unconscious and vicious. We're going to do a show next week, I'm hoping on Tuesday, we're going to have a young man on who, when I first met him, he was flat on his back with his scheduled back surgery, such excruciating pain. He couldn't walk. He couldn't move. He lived on his back. He'd been a computer programmer. And I don't remember exactly what the time period was because this goes back several years. He's actually writing a book about his experience with his back pain. He got worksheets. He started laying on his back doing worksheets. Never touched by a knife, unscheduled a surgery, runs around the country teaching, doing body work with people, which means you have to bend and twist and do all kinds of stresses and strains on your back, and he is back pain free. Why? Because he did forgiveness work. So he's going to share with us on Tuesday. And each of you who chooses to share, he teaches the work all over the planet as he travels. It's just awesome to watch how many people are stepping up to the plate and sharing it with someone else. And you don't have to know a lot. If you just know that the word forgive means to cancel, and you're sitting in front of somebody who goes, well, this is crazy, I've got this goal, and you're telling me to cancel. It's like, tell you what, just try it and see what happens. And people have an experience that's just monumental. So that's my take on the sociopath, Dr. Tim. Do you have any other input on sociopathic behavior?
Well, I would simply echo what you said. You know, nobody knows all of the ins and outs of it, but for years, the thing that's made the most sense and produced the most results for me is when I approach somebody who's angry or vicious or bitter or seems to act without any conscience as though they were once a perfect innocent child that had a lot of unpleasant, unsavory, or even extremely abusive things happen to them at a very young age. And when I do that and I'm looking for ways to help them connect to that true nature, that's when I get the most results, and that's when I have seen results in my 39 years of doing therapy that the professionals and the experts would say can't happen. So I would echo just everything you said. Yeah. And even though I don't have the insight of knowing exactly how it all happens, I get the best results when I approach those people as though they are capable of tapping into their true nature and helping them do just that.
Awesome. Jeannie and I went into a prison system in Arizona back a couple of years ago. We were invited. In Arizona, they start putting children in prison at 9 years of age. And they actually recently overtook Georgia as the state that imprisons more people than any other state. It used to be Georgia that held the record. It's now Arizona. And so we went into work with about 100 9 to 16-year-olds, and there's so much violence there. I mean, in this prison that Rex and Michelle go into regularly, you know, they're allowed to have pencils and pens. When we went into this one, they wouldn't even give them pencils to do a worksheet because a pencil's a weapon. So we go in to work with these kids, and one young girl who's, you know, obviously Miss Tough. She's got a chip on her shoulder. And we ask for somebody who will volunteer to do a worksheet, who will stand up and, you know, participate. And this young girl steps up. And, you know, she's angry with her dad, and her dad is this, and her dad is that, and her dad's done this or and done that to her. And she's obviously got a lot of rage. And so there are 100 kids sitting in the room, and we ask the question that we ask always at the beginning of every Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and that is, how many have ever held a newborn child? And you watch these kids soften as they answer, as they held their baby brother, baby sister, and they soften, and it's awesome, and it's, you know, it's the same answers as everybody else gives. It's this presence of love. And so Jeannie is writing on the board, and she makes this list. And there's about 15 or 20 words that describe, you know, this purity, this presence, this sweetness, this love. And then we turn to them and offer that they have just described themselves. And probably for the first time in their lives, these kids from 9 to 16 have had somebody look at them through Rachma and acknowledge them for who they really are in a world that, you know, the misunderstood three-year-old did something to knock over mom's lamp, and he became the evil child in grandma's mind, and grandma pounded and pounded and pounded and brainwashed mom and dad about how this little boy was evil. And when the energy of evil stuck to him, he became evil. He played it out. And to see these kids shift their energy in recognition. And I'd love to be a fly on the wall to follow these people through the years and the years and the years and see just how well that idea has stuck, that you are this list. You are the active presence of love. You are not any of the things that you've done. Have you done them? Yeah. Is it inappropriate? Yeah. If you're not safe in your community, should you be put behind bars? Yeah, that's all true. And can we bring you healing? Can we stop the insanity that puts the vicious and the violent in to guard the vicious and the violent so that there's a larger pool of viciousness and violence in the world? Or is somebody going to wake up and get big enough to go, maybe we should enlarge the pool of the presence of love instead of the presence of viciousness and violence by punishing those who've been vicious and violent? And the whole game changes. So that's what we're here to do. And we hope,
Michael,
to inspire every one of you. Yes, sir.
Earlier, Rex had texted me that he had his hand up. So I don't know if Jeannie is there, if she can see that, but he might have some input for you from the prison stuff. Michael, are you there?
Okay, let's take a look. I'm here. We're just looking to see if Rex is 517. Don't see you on the switchboard. Is he down lower, maybe? She's looking through the switchboard. Ooh, is it? No, that's not Rex's number. There's
he's on there telling press 1.
Push 1, Rex, and let's see what happens. See if we can find you here. You're not showing up. There is 1517 number.
I have another one with her hand up.
So I don't know where. Maybe, Rex, you could hang up and call back. And Jeannie does have somebody with a hand up, so we're going to go ahead and answer that and hope that Rex calls back again and that it comes through. Area code 910, you are on the air. Welcome. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? 910, are you with us? Hello, area code 910.
Sorry.
910-547.
I'm here.
You had your mute button on. I've done that.
I know, and I was so sure that I didn't have it on. Yes, I know it's late in the show.
I've been there, done that.
I know. I hear you. I've done it many times and been talking away. As a matter of fact, I was talking when I first got on the show, and I was unmuted. Thank goodness I wasn't unmuted on the switchboard. I was talking to you saying, way to go, Michael. So I'm just calling in from our phone call today.
Cool. What would you like to share?
Well, I would like to share when
what's
I was
happening
talking
in your world.
My world is absolutely wonderful. One thing I do want to say is from my personal experience of attending 2 intensives 2 years in a row in Heartland, money and the best investment in myself, in my education, in my career, in my family, in my relationships, in my life. The best money spent ever. And I was telling Michael that my carbon-based memory is very much into watching where I spend my money. And I can say my business is growing like great guns. I can't believe it. And listen to my carbon-based memory there. at least I'm catching it, Michael. I have lots and lots of work.
Good work.
I have lots of weddings, doing 5 worksheets a day, doing a workshop this weekend on healing through relationships. So I appreciate all of your insight today, and I'll go back and listen to the show again because I had several interruptions while I was trying to get on the call. But I just can say that if anybody is sitting on the fence of whether to go to an intensive or not, please call me or just take my word for it. It will change your life. It has changed my life. And it's just, it's a miracle, the way I see the world and how happy I am. This morning, after talking to Michael, the tears were streaming just at the joy that I have when I know that I don't have to give my power away by blaming somebody else. I can pick up the pencil. I can do my forgiveness work. I can breathe. I can hold the presence of love for the people around me. And anyway, I wanted to share a situation that I had. I don't know what my time looks like on the phone, so I'm just going to take a look. I can't see the clock. So anyway.
Hey, we've got about 3 minutes.
Okay. I think that's not enough time, so I'll just call back on Monday because tomorrow's Aramaic Friday. How about that?
Okay. Awesome.
And I'll let you wrap up the show. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Okay. Much appreciation. All right. Love and blessings.
Love and blessings. Thank you.
It's such, as Dr. Tim has said when he watches in the support groups, the shifts and changes that happens, it's such an honor and such a blessing to get to facilitate this process in the world. And I thank my lucky stars and the Creator every day for the fact that I got to play and hang out with the Aramaic Yeshua and to start to understand how he said to go about approaching living as a human being. You know, the world is so filled with belief systems about him, but the how-to has been by and large lost, and so we're looking to reestablish it, and it's certainly an honor to get the opportunity to do that and to share it with you. And so we're glad you're with us. As far as what's happening in the world, if you look at our schedule, we've got some things scheduled in a series in Las Vegas. We've got a series in Pasco, Washington set up. We are in Costa Rica for the next 6 weeks. We met with the promotion person yesterday, last night, and he's going to work with us on putting some things together here in Costa Rica as we learn to speak Spanish. That's happening. We do have, and we haven't chosen to cancel it yet. We're sitting on the cusp of whether or not we're going to go forward with the 9-day codependence intensive, March the 7th through the 15th. We're just a couple of weeks off from it, and we've kind of got it on hold. There have been a couple of people who said they want to do it, but not enough to really have it happen yet. So if you're ready to step up to the plate and go to the next level, come join us in Costa Rica. It's actually, especially from the East Coast, a relatively inexpensive place to get to. I know we flew out of Fort Lauderdale. It was $260 round trip, so it's reasonable. Awesome place. Nice time to get out of the States with the weather that's going on. And so come and join us. If you'd like to do that, just jump on the website and drop us an email. Give us a call, and we'll look forward to seeing you here in Costa Rica. We've got this awesome place that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, and it's just beautiful. So thank you for being with us. We appreciate you, and share the work with somebody. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.